Hello, you are listening to the Modern Web Podcast, where we explore next generation frameworks, standards, and techniques. I'm Tracy Lee at Lady Leet on Twitter, and you can find us online at modern-web.org.
Hello, and welcome to Modern Web. I am Nicolina Huebner, the co-host for this podcast. And today, our topic of the month is accessibility. And today, I have with me Jen Luker. She is a lead software engineer at the Deseret Digital Media, and she gives lots of talks on accessibility and is often acts as a consultant for accessibility on open source projects. Let's just go ahead and jump straight into the topic. And Jen, can you define for me what exactly is accessibility?
Accessibility is actually a pretty broad coverage of a wide variety of topics, but I think one of the best things that I've seen as far as the definition of accessibility is that accessibility is both the tools which people with disabilities can utilize in order to make information available to them, and then it's also from the developer and designer side, it's being able to utilize and play to those tools in order to make sure that what we present is available for those people with disabilities to use their tools to browse the web.
Awesome. I love that definition because it really speaks to both like what it means from the user end as well as the developer end, and what it means to be into accessibility, as I often hear people say. But like, what exactly does this cover when you talk about people with like disabilities? Like when I started learning code, I only really thought of accessibility as like people using screen readers, but like that's not everything that it covers, right?
Absolutely not. Every single one of us has suffered from either a temporary or circumstantial disability in addition to the permanent ones that you think of, like blindness or limb disabilities or paralysis, being deaf. There's a really large, broad set of people that have those circumstantial disabilities. For instance, if you're holding a baby, you might as well only have one arm. Or if you're in a really loud room and you want to watch a video, you're taking advantage of subtitles, which is often seen as just an accessibility feature. You're not deaf, but you might as well be because of the noise in the room. There's times when you only have access to your keyboard. There's times when you only have access to your mouse. There's times when you don't have a monitor and you need to rely on screen readers to be able to give you that information that you need. So it's actually a large variety of disabilities. One that most people have had is having their eyes dilated, which doesn't happen nearly as often as it used to. But if you've ever had your eyes dilated, then you are extremely photosensitive. So taking advantage of disability accessibility tools is really helpful in those types of circumstances.
Yeah, wonderful. I think it's really helpful to think about accessibility as not something that's so far removed from myself, because it's easy to think about the person with like, you know, only one hand that can access something. But like so often we are that person that needs more options when we use the web. And knowing what the options are as we're like utilizing a certain site, and also thinking about people with disabilities not too different from the rest of us. I actually had this really funny moment this morning. You actually sent me this site where you can go through your site, you can enter your URL and see your site with different visibility filters for people with different color blindness. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they have like, you know, those circles with like made up of dots with a number in it. And if you can see it, then you're not colorblind. And if you can't see it, then, or if you can't see it, then you are. And anyway, so they had this certain filter on and I couldn't read the numbers in these dots. And I had this moment like, oh, like maybe I and myself is like, suffering from colorblindness, I've never known, and I could like access these low visibility features. And I like did some more research, and I turned out that like it was what I was, the experience I was meant to have, but it was really educational of like what it might actually be like to have something that people never talk about, like colorblindness. And as simple as like being able to add a filter onto your site makes a huge difference to people.
Absolutely. There's quite a few of those tools that are really helpful. Another one that I found that I hope we'll post later is an audio representation of people that have different hearing issues. So you can hear what it's like in a loud room with people talking and then having someone talking across the table at you. You can kind of tell the differences between how well they can hear the different you know, the different environments and how it affects the ability to hear.
Another disability that is on the list of accessibility considerations is cognitive and mental disabilities.
Yes.
And I find that really interesting because so much of, and I'm sure you have so much more to talk about this than I do, Jen, but like while I was listening to this this tutorial by John Cooperman, which I highly recommend. But what he's saying about creating a site that's accessible for people with cognitive mental disabilities is that the best practices for a website that considers this population is actually the best practices for most people. So this would be like text that doesn't, that isn't too long or too close together, or like videos that don't play automatically. And like so often we are that person that is too stressed or has too much going on that we actually do need that those considerations for ourselves. But like that we can temporarily be the person that has some sort of cognitive limitation on our access to a website. And it plays a big factor into how we utilize a certain site or how our experience is when we're doing that certain task.
We all have moments where we're tired or we're with the with the broad sweeping movement of open floor plan, we are full of people that are talking and moving around and shuffling, and offices are not exactly built these days to be soundproof. So we have a lot of sound and movement bouncing around all around us at any given time. And at some point, you know, humans can in fact reach their threshold. And when you also have that coming through the websites that you're looking at, and when you're trying to do your job, you've got all of these other stimuli coming through the screen, it can really be just too much and you need to step away. Taking those into consideration when you're designing a website and making it a little less cluttered, a little cleaner, a little bit more white space can really make the difference.
Awesome. Another thing that I listened to was also John Cooperman, and he was talking about how the web is accessible by nature, and it's actually the sites that we create that create the barriers for entry for people with different disabilities. And there's this crazy stat that 9 out of 10 websites are not accessible.
Isn't that awful?
So it's really it's amazing to think about. That's 9 out of 10 websites that you might not be able to access if you have any one of the amazing ranges of disabilities that are covered under accessibility.
I was actually talking to a friend yesterday about a website, and because of the fact that JavaScript is so easy to manipulate the DOM, you can create and destroy elements at will with very, you know, very little concern. And he was taking a menu and he would destroy the menu and then recreate it as a hamburger menu. And then when you resized your screen, it would destroy the hamburger menu and recreate the button menu. Not only did he use divs, which is a really bad idea for anything link or button related, but with the destruction of that menu, and the fact that the code moved within the page, the ability to just tab through a page changed depending on what screen size you were at. So even the location of information as you were going through it was changed. If you were focused on a menu item and you resized your screen, then you lost focus and it was set to some random place that you wouldn't know, and you'd have to, you know, essentially navigate through the page again to try to figure out how the new page works. With people that can see those websites, it's not as much of a big deal. They can use your mouse just to navigate back to where they want to. But if you're using a screen reader in those situations, you're using your ears in order to see a web page. And if you're changing the way that the DOM is structured and you're changing the order in which you tab through information, then each time one of those major changes happens, you have to relearn how the entire page is reformatted just so that you can get back to what you want. So sometimes it's more than just making sure that you don't use divs when you're trying to make a button, or you make sure that the colors match. Sometimes it goes as deeply as making sure that the organization of your page is accessible.
So without getting too technical, how much of a hassle is it for a developer to make those considerations as they're doing, when they're making changes to their site like that?
I think that mostly it takes just thinking about it and having the right questions to ask, and the ability to test it using those same tools that people that have those disabilities utilize, like screen readers or only having a keyboard. Oftentimes it's not a major problem to use CSS to modify something instead of using JavaScript, or to remember where the focus was and put it back once you're done rearranging things. It's just knowing that you need to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that in my experience, oftentimes people will think about accessibility as like an extra optional part of their routine. And what I've seen is that many times they'll just kind of allocate one person on the team to be like the accessibility referee. What do you think the pros and cons of that kind of strategy might be?
I think that the pro is that you have someone who's constantly thinking about these things. You have someone who is going through your websites and making sure that accessibility is part of the definition of done before it's released. I think the con of that is you end up coding your website, and then someone has to come back and tell you you have to recode your website in order to fix these things. If you start with accessibility from the very beginning, as a feature, and you take that into consideration and you move through your project constantly checking and making sure that each story's definition of done is complete before moving on to the next one, then you're going to have a lot fewer issues that you're going to start trying to fix later.
Yeah, and not to mention that there's a lot less rewriting of code that would happen.
Absolutely.
So in a sense that like the referee or the person, the accessibility person, if everybody took that on as their responsibility and there was a certain mandatory set of tests to test the accessibility, wouldn't that completely take away that one person's accessibility role on the team?
Yes and no. The fact that you still have everyone thinking about those things, making sure that their own code is coded to that, doesn't change the fact that the tools themselves are always evolving. And as the technology evolves, we're having to adapt to those new technologies. And usually the accessibility person that you have on your team has been thinking about these questions long enough that they kind of intuitively know how to ask the questions of new technology. And oftentimes it seems that in accessibility, it's not knowing how to make it accessible that's more of the barrier. It's remembering to ask the questions and knowing what questions to ask.
Oh, that's an excellent point. Because there are so many tools that do become available over time. This brings me to my next question, what steps could we take to lower the barrier of entry to learning accessibility? I'd like to start with like learning how to code. Do you have any tips on that?
Yes, actually. I think that part of our culture of thinking of accessibility as an afterthought starts when we learn how to code. I think that if we as a community worked towards training people right from the very beginning about the questions that we should be asking regarding making our sites accessible, that inherently it would eventually become just a common sense standard. So beginning with the students that are coming in, the people that want to start coding, it's a great time to start getting them thinking about those questions.
Awesome. Yeah, I personally learned how to code in a boot camp, and I did not hear the word accessibility until I started actually working on a team with other people. And I just started like taking the kind of code that they would write and reusing it. And somebody did a code review, and they like did like A11I thumbs up happy face. And I remember looking at it and I was just like, A11I, why, like, what is this? Why is this a good thing? Like, what is it, like, what did I do well? And I then that sent me down the rabbit hole of like accessibility and like the simple ways that just like learning how to do basic code still requires considerations of accessibility features. Another thing that I came up for me when I was like learning to code is that so much of what I accessed when I was learning to code came from the docs. And this might be like a crazy idea, but like to see examples of code that have like using, you know, less divs or like tab indexes and, you know, the simple like HTML code that actually incorporates basic principles of accessibility is something that I know that I would have definitely soaked up during my early learning years.
Definitely. There's certain tools that are out there like the W3C website on accessibility and things like that. And I found that when you're faced with that big giant wall of parameters and definitions and words, that it can be really, really hard to just force yourself to comb through them. And then once you've read them, how do you apply them? So I've found a few checklists that I've really advocated for on the web. Most recently was the ESPN accessibility just posted. They have a really fantastic list of basically best practices. And at the bottom of their page, they do have the references to the documentation, and we should all really use the docs. But I like the fact that they have check marks. Like the very first one is, have you added meaningful alt text to images? You know, it's a much more accessible way for developers to add accessibility to their products, is understanding what they really should be doing. And sometimes the documentation that you read is just an ARIA tag and commonly what it's used for. And that can be really difficult, and it's definitely a barrier to entry. And I think that if we started with our documentation for developers and making them more easily readable and more accessible, that we'd get more of those tools available to us.
I think it's, the irony is not lost on me that in my search for learning accessibility, all of the resources that I've come across have just been incredibly well designed and accessible, if you will. Like if you have any inkling to like start researching accessibility, I think you'll be overwhelmed by the format and the tools that are available, because it's, you know, it's definitely their prerogative to help promote this this as a norm in code.
So I was looking at some of the tools that I've been using, and I realized that, you know, or I should say that I recognize the fact that most everyone doesn't get to start with a brand new clean slate project and build accessibility from the ground up into their project. Most people are coming into accessibility with a full-fledged website or product and they're trying to add accessibility at the end. So with those large-scale projects or even your personal projects or even the code that you're learning on, there are some really cool tools that you can utilize to help make those transitions easier. And almost all of them are checklist-based, which is really great. One of the tools that is my favorite is by DQ Systems. There's Axe and Axe Coconut that you can plug into either Chrome or Firefox that will analyze your web page and give you a checklist of items that you need to look at and review. And Axe Coconut is really good in that it also gives you links to read more about what the problems are with these particular issues that they found, so that you can actually learn more about the issue and its possible solutions and how to fix those things. So that's one of my favorite tools for taking a project that's in existence, or even when you're building it from the ground up, and making sure from a testing standpoint that those things are accessible through development.
Jen, do you have any tips on how to help your team incorporate accessibility? Let's say if you have a team of like 5 people and you're working on a site they know needs a lot of help generally, how you can go about advocating for a simple, like, and yet a palatable approach that will get people on board with incorporating these considerations as they're, you know, about getting everything else shipped at the same time.
I was playing with Create React App, which is the kind of the standard that the React developers have released for a getting started project. And as I was playing with Create React App and messing around with just building a small project for myself, it not only had a linter built in, but it had an accessibility linter built in, which was fantastic. So yeah. As you saved, you couldn't pass the linter without passing the accessibility checks as you went. So that's something that I've incorporated into my teams, is because it started getting them on board with some of the really obvious pieces, like making sure you have alt tags or putting ARIA tags on certain items, making sure that it shows whether it's hidden or shown for modals, things like that. So it was the easiest way to introduce it to my team and to get them at least passing the initial accessibility check, was that it was built into their linter and they couldn't commit without it.
I love that. And it really takes away any concern you might have of like going into a meeting and like worrying about being like, hey, like, I know we've got a lot of things that we're trying to get out the door, but like, can you try to like remember ARIA tags? Like, it takes all of that out of the equation and you can all just sit down and like suddenly write better code. It's wonderful. It's a great tip.
Mm-hmm. Another piece was, again, making sure that as part of that, not just code review, but a full peer review, that we used like Axe Coconut or Axe in order to run through it and double check and make sure that those tests were running. Our QA team also uses a screen reader and tries to navigate through the website through just the keyboard to try to make sure that some of those items are covered as well. I try to encourage my team to utilize the screen readers. Some people are much more willing to do that than others, but at least we do have QA that's covering a lot of that. And with the accessibility linter, we are at least covering most of our bases.
Yeah. What is your take on accessibility specs? I know we've kind of talked about checklists, but can you speak to accessibility specs and whether or not you think they're something that should be part of the routine as you go through your site?
I think that just in general that accessibility should be part of your definition of done. But as far as specs, I've only seen a few major specifications, and one of them is by like the US government has official accessibility specs that are by law required for government buildings and infrastructure and software and websites, that all of those things are by law required to be accessible. So they have their own website that shows you a checklist of specifications that are required in order for those to be legal even. And I think that as just standard websites, it's not as legally required for us to do those things, but by following at least the legal regulations, we are adding that layer of not only protection for ourselves, but we're also making sure that we are covering most of our bases.
Yeah, that's a really great resource. So, and it's good to know that the government sites are following those too.
So I think they're helpful, but they don't cover everything. And as new technologies evolve, it can take a little longer for those things to propagate out to the rest of the world, which is why I like the built-in tools that just make it easier for us to check and makes it a bit easier for us to go that extra step, go that extra mile in order to really make sure that what we have is available for everyone to use.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Jen, what would you like the takeaway message for our listeners to be?
I have 2 points. One of them is that accessibility is not just for some other nameless person that you don't know. Accessibility is for you. I mean, we all are going to get older, and our eyes are going to fail us, and our limbs are going to fail us eventually. We have a lot of, cognitive or hidden disabilities that are, impossible to see, but are there, such as, ADD, or as the, growing level of autism, as they age and go through their lives trying to have jobs and work, we have just a lot of different tools. I mean, you carry a baby or your cat won't get off your mouse. We have these things, and it's not just for other people, it's for you. The other thing that I really want to point out is that every little bit helps. Like with each story you complete or each checkbox you tick off on those lists, it's another group of users that have new access to your website. So even if you can't push through we're making everything accessible today, if you just made sure that your buttons were buttons and your anchor tags are anchor tags, or you made sure that you can kind of navigate around your site with using your tab key, that stuff helps. That stuff really makes a difference. So every little bit helps. And as we all continue to develop these habits and to teach the next generation these skills, the better and more accessible the web will be.
Thank you so much, Jen. This has been really enlightening for myself. And if you have any questions, we'd love to start a conversation on, we'll respond to your comments on YouTube, and we'll also be posting the resources that we've mentioned. So it's such a good start if you haven't gotten into accessibility, and an amazing start for people working on a larger team. So thank you for your time and your expertise and really all the contributions that you've made to the world of accessibility.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. To find more podcasts, videos, and online conferences, check out modern-web.org or find us on Twitter @modernweb_. See you around the internet.